available on digital media, iTunes podcast, smartphone apps, and from the online website. This is Outlook, the talking newspaper for Coventry.
Hello and welcome from me, Ashley Haywood, to the first Outlook of 2026, and it's been recorded on Wednesday the 14th of January. Now, first of all, an apology from all of us here at the Outlook studio, as we should have been back with our first 2026 edition last week. But unfortunately, despite much time and effort, problems overcame us and we were unable to record satisfactorily. So, a big apology. Anyway, we hope you had a really good Christmas and we wish you a happy and healthy New Year. Have you made any New Year resolutions? Have you broken them already like me? Let us know in postbag. Now in this edition, we're going to hear about Christmas markets and the village of Preston Baggot, as well as an exhibition which showcases the achievements of some amazing blind people. There's also a feature on a very expensive watch, and we reminisce about growing up in Coventry in the 1970s. Finally, Sarah will be back with the answers to her Christmas quiz. All of this, plus your postbag, the sports news, an update from the hub, and information about local events. Firstly, however, we have the week's local news, read today by Peter and Elaine.
Outlook News.
HS2 has confirmed that it's aimed to get trains running between Birmingham and London between 2029 and 2033 cannot be achieved. Birmingham's Curzon Street station is currently taking shape, but the controversial high-speed railway project has been plagued by serious challenges. Earlier this year, HS2 CEO Mark Wilde acknowledged that construction had been harder than thought and needed a reset, involving a review of the project's cost and schedule. In an end-of-year update, HS2 insisted that significant progress had been made throughout 2025, with the project now at an advanced stage of a comprehensive reset. However, it went on to say that Mr. Wilde had provided advice to the government confirming that the railway's 2029-33 opening schedule could not be achieved. HS2 Limited has since been finalising a new range of credible cost and schedule estimates, a statement read. In this latest update, Mr. Wilde said he made a commitment to address the failures of the past and get HS2 on track. It's clear that we can only do so with a fundamental reset. Over the last year, we've been through the programme with a fine-tooth comb, and we're now very close to establishing a clear path forward. We've shown what can be done, and I expect that to continue throughout 2026 and beyond, as we deliver HS2 as safely and efficiently as possible, and for the lowest reasonable cost. A number of changes have been made already as part of the reset, including toughening up cost controls, strengthening the leadership team and reshaping HS2 into a less bureaucratic organisation. It has also established a new construction schedule to prioritise completing the initial phase of the railway between Old Oak Common in London and Birmingham. In its latest update, HS2 said it was at peak production, with all 23 miles of deep bore tunnels having now been excavated on the opening section of the railway between Old Oak Common and Birmingham Curzon Street. Figures show 70% of the project's vast earthworks programme has now been delivered. Almost 300,000 tonnes of steel has been used, 69% of that required for the railway. HS2 is now focused on completing the complex civil engineering programme across the 140-mile route, ahead of the next vital stage when the track, signalling and communications system are installed.
The incredible achievements of young people in Coventry have been recognised at the Care Leaver Awards. More than 250 young people attended the annual event at Fargo Village along with carers, social workers and support staff. The Care Leaver of the Year award was given to Rosalind Bonsu, who works with Coventry City Council's Care Leavers Forum and the Become charity. Fiona McCann, team manager, said, "Rosalind plays a vital role in our local Care Leavers Forum, where she consistently contributes thoughtful insights and advocates for meaningful change. Her voice has helped shape services and policies which directly impact care leavers, and she is deeply respected by peers and professionals alike. Through her work with the Become charity, Rosalind recently went to the Houses of Parliament and spoke directly to politicians about the real challenges faced by care leavers. Rosalind has also begun working with a local radio station, Hills FM, using media as a platform to raise awareness and amplify the voices of care-experienced young people. Her creativity and drive to make a difference shine through in everything she does. More than 20 further young people were recognised for their achievements, winning prizes including Hearts of Gold Awards, to recognise young people who've shown tremendous support, love and care. The event also featured stalls from local and national partners, food stands, a selfie booth and a stilt man, and there was a special performance from the Care to Dance group, comprising children in care from Coventry who come together to perform, and a reading from poet, author and care leaver Tyrone Horton. Councillor Patricia Seaman, the Council's Cabinet Member for Children and Young People, said, "These awards are always an amazing evening, and we are so proud to honour not only those receiving awards, but all our incredible children and young people in care. The stories were so moving and showed how our care leavers have such courage and determination to overcome obstacles in their young lives. Coventry works very hard to be a child-friendly city and to put children and young people at the heart of our work. But that can only succeed with the support of many people and organisations and the young people themselves. Congratulations and thank you to our care leavers and to all who work so hard to give them the best possible start in life."
City market traders are to be given extra financial support while the major regeneration project City Centre South is ongoing. Traders in Coventry told the City Council they need help attracting customers and meeting their costs during the £450 million work, and a Cabinet member has now considered two petitions with a total of over 1,200 signatures and offered new support. Traders who are not in arrears will receive the equivalent of two quarters rent relief during the 2026 calendar year and a quarter during 2027, the Council said. Those liable for business rates will see their rates relief extended until the end of 2027-28. Jim O'Boyle, the Cabinet Member for Jobs, Regeneration and Climate Change, who considered the petitions, said, "Everybody wants to see the market succeed. The truth is that it forms part of what is going to be an even better offering in the city centre, and the market needs to be at the centre of that. We do recognise that the facade is in a terrible state, and that is a legacy of no investment over a number of years." Additionally, after a report by Adam Hunt, the Council's strategic lead on property and development, had explained how the market had been hoarded off for safety reasons, the Council had come up with ways to address this. After ongoing talks with traders, initiatives had included improvements to the signs promoting the site and a marketing campaign. Councillor Roger Bailey, who together with Councillor John Blundell has sponsored one of the petitions, said, "I feel this is a big step in the right direction, as we were calling for a rent reduction and better promotion. I am very grateful for what has been offered, and it is a positive step. I just hope it is enough for some of them who are very close to the line."
A local automotive expert says that Jaguar Land Rover's performance has been severely aggravated after a dramatic slump in sales. Wholesale figures have fallen dramatically by over 43% in the last 3 months of 2025. Just 59,200 vehicles were produced during the quarter, approximately 45,000 fewer than in the same period in last year. Dr. Charles Tennant identified the reasons for the slump. He is the local automotive analyst, and he said, JLR's sales performance is still being severely affected by the cyber attack in September. Retail sales were down in all markets, where the total decline was 25%, at 79,600 cars. It took JLR quite some time to carefully and safely get their production systems back up and running again, which has impacted their ability to get cars out into the global markets. In addition, they're feeling the effects of the US tariffs. Sales are down some 38%, and a slowdown of sales in China, down 18%, due to new luxury car taxes in that market. The UK market fared a little better, where sales dropped by only 13%, probably because they had sufficient wholesale stocks at the dealerships. But sales in Europe were down a whopping 27%, presumably due to low wholesale stocks. Though there are still some positives, with some models still selling well despite the challenges, Dr. Tennant is unsure if the deficit can be turned round before the end of the financial year. He finished, "It is still the highly profitable Range Rover and Defender models that are driving the sales figures. They account for some 75% of total sales, but I imagine this quarter will still show a financial loss when results are reported in early February. And it remains to be seen whether they can turn all this around in the final financial quarter, that's January to March of 2026.
A call is being made for Coventry City Council to bring in a four-day week. Currently, some staff who work for the local authority in waste services work for 4 days. But a bid is being made for the council to bring in the four-day week for other staff. Councillor Grace Lewis is proposing that the council explore the possibility of a council-wide adoption of a four-day week model, starting with identifying specific departments who would most benefit. The motion says that it could help boost staff well-being and health, as well as enhance recruitment and retention, as well as ease spending on agency staff. The motion, which has been backed by Councillor Esher Reeves, states that the recent letter from the local government secretary Steve Reed discouraging councils from adopting four-day week models is concerning, and that the council should explore the benefits it could bring. It goes on to claim that South Cambridge District Council has made savings on agency staff and retained more staff since bringing in a four-day working week. The full resolution that all councillors will be asked to debate is to explore the possibility of a council-wide adoption for a four-day week model, starting with identifying specific departments who would most benefit. Engage with council staff to identify how a four-day week could be implemented without disrupting services or reducing resident satisfaction. That is, staggering schedules. Outline a timeline for any pilot and any subsequent implementation pilot. Monitor and report outcomes, including using metrics of staff well-being, productivity, service delivery for residents, reduction of agency costs, recruitment and retention in any trials which take place. To reply to Steve Reed advocating for more flexible and innovative approaches to local government employment practices, identifying successes from other public sector organisations, and our own use of a four-day week schedule.
Work to reveal parts of the River Sherbourne in Coventry city centre is nearing completion. The £2.6 million Palmer Lane project started in March 2024 and involves uncovering a section of the mostly underground River Sherbourne to create a new public green space in the city. The aim of the project is to transform a previously forgotten area by creating an open watercourse with new landscaping and lighting. It is the only part of the city where the river is visible, and the plan includes steps leading down to the water and public seating areas. Jordan Davis from the Sherbourne Valley Project said the project really highlights the existence of the river within the city centre. It was not just a construction project, but an opportunity for residents to find out more about the Sherbourne and its history, he said. It's said that Coventry's very existence, going back as far as 700 AD, is because of the River Sherbourne. It's Coventry's foundational river. People came and settled here because of the river itself. Coventry owes a lot of its industrial history to the river as well. Loads of working mills, a lot of the sort of cloth dyeing, which is obviously the composition of the river itself, and that's where we get Coventry Blue from. The project is a collaboration between Coventry City Council, Historic Coventry Trust, Severn Trent Water and the Environment Agency.
Coventry City Council has been fined almost £1 million over residents not putting their rubbish into the right bins. A finance report covering the council's expenditure for the 3 months leading to the end of September 2025 showed a £1.5 million overspend by the City Services Department. £900,000 of that overspend was related to contamination fines from non-recyclable waste being put into recycling bins. Conservative group leader Councillor Gary Ridley asked the Cabinet meeting what is to be done about what he described as an absolutely enormous figure. Mark Adams, the Council's Acting Director of City Services, explained that the cost of the fines were high because the Council has been charged twice. He said if anything is contaminated, it has to be turned away, so it is a double charge, because we are charged for taking it in and then we are charged for taking it out to another specialist tip that can take that type of waste. Mr. Adams said that the penalties are part of the Council's contract with Sherbourne Recycling Facility, which has only come into effect since April. Councillor Patricia Heatherton, the portfolio holder for City Services, said the Council are trying to tackle the issue by educating residents about what they can put in their bins. She said, "It is about education and making sure that people do understand and know what they can and can't put in their bins. We are doing a comms activity with pictures rather than words. For instance, at Christmas, it is about letting people know that they cannot put anything with glitter on in for recycling. It is really important how we manage our waste because it is costing us if the waste is contaminated."
And now some further, perhaps precise, details about recycling. A legal specialist has outlined a £400 penalty warning regarding substantial alterations to household refuse collections set to commence this March. The modifications are designed to boost recycling rates and establish standardised procedures throughout England. From March the 31st, every local authority across England must implement consistent collections encompassing glass, metal, plastic, paper, cardboard and weekly food waste. This will result in households now requiring four separate bins for recycling purposes in the majority of instances. Legal expert Gary Rycroft clarified that the fresh regulations solely affect English residents. There are new rules coming in which the government has imposed to say that people should have four different types of waste. These rules come into force this March, so if you're going to have to separate your waste into things that can't be recycled, then food waste, then paper and card, and finally other dry recycling, you need to listen carefully. Numerous items remain unsuitable for recycling. And if residents are caught depositing these materials in the wrong containers, they may face enforcement measures, including financial penalties. So these items include some glass, like light bulbs, certain metals, including cookware, wet wipes, and even particular food products which are labelled as biodegradable. To sum up, the four categories are, and you never know when we're going to set a test about this on Outlook, so do pay attention, residual non-recyclable waste. This is general rubbish that cannot be reused or recycled. That's number one. Number two, food waste, collected weekly. This includes leftovers, fruit and vegetable scraps, bones, eggshells, tea bags and coffee grounds. Three, paper and card. Cardboard packaging and paper must now be kept separate from other recyclables to maintain material quality. Mm-hmm. And that fourth section is dry recyclables, a mixed bin for plastic, metal and glass, which can no longer go alongside paper and card.
There are many milestones to remember about David Bowie 10 years after his death, but the fact that he apparently paid for a Warwickshire car park is not one that most people know. But for Norman Miller, it is the biggest memory he has of the musician, having put in a plea for him to play at Bindley Woods Village Hall, first in 2014. Miller, an ex-Hall committee member, was inevitably told by the star's son, Duncan Jones, the show could not happen. But when David died on the 10th of January 2016, he heard from his son again. Apparently drawing on his father's marketing genius, the son offered £10,116, the date of his death, in cash, towards the Village Hall car park. At first, Norman Miller thought it was a scam, telling the BBC, "I went to the bank and showed them the letter, and they said they'd opened an account with nothing in it, and then the money was transferred the day he died." Before the generous donation, Mr. Miller said the Hall's car park fund was going nowhere. So as a David Bowie fan, he thought, "I'll write to him. I've admired him all my life. I thought, well, I'll get him to come and do a concert to raise funds." At the time in 2014, when his son sent a reply saying his father was not taking on work due to his health, but that didn't stop Mr. Miller. "I kept sending letters, and I put everything in it that I could think of, about my family, about the Sky Blues. Everything I could think of, I crammed in a letter." He heard nothing for 2 years, but then on the day of the star's passing, he heard from the son again. The second letter thanked him for the joke he had sent, and that it had made his father smile. "And because of the letters and jokes you sent, which kept my father's spirits up, we are going to give your Village Hall £10,116. According to Paul Salisbury, the current chair of the parish council, the amount covered the deposit on the car park's construction. The village has affectionately called it the car park David Bowie got paid for ever since. Without that money, it wouldn't have been done. It was the last part of the jigsaw," Salisbury said.
Plans to turn an abandoned former golf course into a large nature reserve could move a step closer as councillors meet to vote on the proposals. Brandon Wood Golf Course closed to the public with the 2020 coronavirus pandemic and costs Coventry City Council £70,000 a year to maintain. The council is now discussing plans to turn it into a 64-hectare nature reserve some 6 kilometres away from Coventry City Centre. Plans will be discussed this month, and the scheme could begin in 2026. It would mean the demolition of the existing clubhouse and registering the site as a biodiversity net gain habitat bank. Approval of the plans would see the golf course's fairways, greens and bunkers replaced with wetland, grassland, ponds, hedgerows and shrubs, which would be created and maintained by experts from the Warwickshire Wildlife Trust. This would include introducing a herd of cattle on the site for natural grazing. The site could become a major new visitor destination, said the City Council. It is also hoped that an outdoor education centre on the site of the old clubhouse could be built. Councillor Jim O'Boyle added that the scheme was a unique opportunity to create something very special, not just for the city and the region, but for the country's wildlife. We know the UK is one of the most nature-depleted nations in the world, with one in six species at risk of extinction. We have made a commitment in the Council's climate change strategy to do all we can to support nature recovery, and this site presents a significant opportunity to do that on a scale rarely seen. The reserve would link with surrounding land to create over 350 hectares of land dedicated to preserving wildlife. Ed Green, Chief Executive of the Warwickshire Wildlife Trust, said, "Bringing the former golf course into management for wildlife joins up several sites across the wider Brandon area and creates the scale needed to support several key species. People in future, just a few minutes from Coventry City Centre, can expect to see ospreys, bitterns, otters and perhaps even beavers one day." A number of options had previously been considered, including a hotel, a glamping site, a solar farm and gravel extraction. However, none of these were considered financially or environmentally suitable, and the area is also prone to flooding. The council will need to obtain planning permission for the change of use from Rugby Borough Council and would then work with Warwickshire County Council and other partners to develop the site. It would be a phased development with the financial costs supported through income generated from property developers who are required to improve natural habitats as part of any project.
The demolition of a former record store run by music producer Pete Waterman has left him shocked, he said, but with fond memories of its role in British music history. The Soul Hole in City Arcade Coventry was once a hangout, he said, of local band The Specials, who he had helped to promote decades ago. But the site where he started out as a fledgling DJ and music entrepreneur has now been reduced to rubble as part of the £450 million redevelopment plan. The overhaul is part of City Centre South scheme, the biggest redevelopment project in the city since it was rebuilt after being devastated by the German bombing raids in World War II. Pete Waterman, who became a household name in the 1980s, after producing records by acts such as Kylie Minogue and Rick Astley, said he accepted times had to move on, and the project could help Coventry become a modern and hopefully boom city. But the loss of a place so entwined in his personal history meant that Waterman's thoughts were turning instead to a point in the previous century. Pete, who was born in the city, said, "Two-tone pioneers The Specials used to spend hours hanging out in the shop. It really was a gathering point, and on a Saturday it would be packed from 10 in the morning until 5 at night. It was incredible," he said. On seeing a video of the demolition, he said, "Oh, it's a bit shocking. Something that you saw actually built and you're alive to see its demise. Well, it's not normally the way things work in buildings, is it?" Plans have been on the drawing board since 2011, and as well as the Soul Hole, a large swathe of other buildings have also been demolished, with more to go the same way. Councillor Jim O'Boyle said he was pleased progress was finally being made. "It's a massive scheme for Coventry and will completely change the way the city looks and feels and how people live, work and shop in our city," he said. On avoiding the design mistakes of the past, he added, "Quality is really, really important. It will be brick built. Every single apartment will have a balcony. That's really important so that people can have open space. And of course, 30% of this new scheme will be green and environmentally friendly."
The CEO of University Hospitals Coventry and Warwickshire Trust has said it is improving its low ranking in an NHS league table, and its placing is not really a true reflection of how it's actually performing. UHCW ranked 132nd out of 134 trusts in NHS league tables published last September, marking it clearly as among England's worst performers in a review that took into account several criteria, including waiting times, cancer treatment, urgent and emergency care, ambulance response times and finance. However, new rankings published on the 11th of December did show that the Hospital Trust has moved up to 96th, and the Trust was rated good by the Care Quality Commission in an assessment published last August, before either of the league tables was published. The Trust's Chief Executive Officer, Professor Andy Hardy, suggested that the data could give a false impression that the Trust's care was unsafe. The challenge with league tables, he said, when they're only based on such a limited number of metrics, is that they can lead to unintended consequences. My biggest concern is that the rankings might concern the public that we serve about the safety of this organisation. And this is actually a good, safe hospital. People need to look at things in the broader context, not just one set of metrics, which can be misleading, even if well-intended. The league tables, perhaps as they mature, as they become more sophisticated in what they measure, will reflect that. The NHS England website says the data is designed to support people to understand the overall position of the organisation in relation to its peers, and it adds that the data is used as part of local NHS accountability. But Professor Hardy said, we're not going to be thinking, OK, what can we do that might get us a better metric? Rather, we're going to be thinking, what's best for the patients? Because unfortunately, sometimes those two things are not always aligned. He said the Trust would continue to do what's right for the patients and work to improve further from the new 96th national position.
And a slightly lighter story to finish on. Three otter cubs rescued after they were left exposed by a tree falling down in a Warwickshire parkland are going from strength to strength. Snap, Crackle and Pop were taken in by Compton Verney Art Gallery and park staff after they were found without their mother. The UK Wild Otter Trust then transferred the trio to its rehab centre in Devon to receive specialist care. The otters were 5 weeks old when they were found in October, with rescuers reporting seeing the mother leave the holt after the tree had fallen. Dave Webb from the Otter Trust said at the time that the mother may have been spooked by the fall and said the cubs were in immediate danger when she did not return the next day. Otters have been present at Compton Verney since 2020, but this is the first confirmed breeding on site. Compton Verney has now written on its Facebook page that it hoped the otters could return to the parkland in the autumn. It says the cubs are now weaned and were settling in at the rehab centre. The post said, we can confirm that Snap and Crackle are both male and Pop is female. At the time of their rescue, little Pop weighed under 300 grams and was the smallest cub the Trust had ever looked after. Thanks to swift action from the grounds team here at Compton Verney and the commitment and expertise of the team at the Otter Trust, the three siblings are doing well. Fingers crossed they can make a safe return to Compton Verney in the autumn.
Outlook News.
And a big thank you to our news readers for this week, Peter and Elaine. And I must say how relieved we are that Snap, Crackle and Pop are doing so well. Now then, lights. It starts getting light now at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's lighting up time at 11 minutes past 4. Right now, I'm delighted to say that Rowan's joined us to tell us about some forthcoming events.
Thank you. So Panto season has officially wound down and theatres are leading up to the start of their 2026 season. The first and only production opening this week is Peter Hall's adaptation of Animal Farm, of course originally written by George Orwell. A bit of a trek for this one over at the Loft Theatre in Leamington Spa, opening on the 21st of January and continuing to the 1st of February. At once funny and frightening, delightful and devastating, Animal Farm charts the fall of idealism and the rise of tyranny after the animals of Manor Farm rise up against their oppressive human owner in a struggle for rights and equality. The Belgrade Theatre knows how to fill its schedule with two different productions over 2 days next week. Rocking with Laughter plays one performance only on the 21st of January at 1:30 p.m. Backed by popular demand, midday variety favourites The Dreamers headline their first big variety show of 2026, presented by multi-talented musician Andy Eastwood. It's a feel-good show guaranteed to set the feet tapping, the smiles glowing and the laughter flowing. Book early and bring a party for this unmissable, sparkling afternoon of music and fun. Tickets are available for both of these productions on the Belgrade website. But before that, another one-time-only performance is What's Love Got to Do with It on the 22nd of January at 7:30 p.m. This electrifying tribute show celebrates the music and unparalleled career of the one and only Queen of Rock and Roll, Tina Turner. Get ready for an unforgettable
simply
evening
of
simply the best. Get ready for an unforgettable evening of high-energy, feel-good rock and soul brought to life by the phenomenal live band. Packed with all the classic hits you know and love, the show delivers show-stopping performances of Proud Mary, River Deep, Mountain High, Simply the Best, as you said, Private Dancer and many more. Heading further into January, the Belgrade Theatre returns with the Willie Russell's cult classic Blood Brothers UK tour from the 27th to the 31st of January, with more information arrive on that one next week. To get your screen fixed, there's really only one talking point, and that is the return of The Traitors. The fourth season of the smash hit BBC Traitors has returned. The first three episodes aired last week and will continue on BBC One and iPlayer for the next 2 weeks. Apologies, this script was originally written for last week's show. We're actually six episodes in, with episode seven airing tonight, the day we're recording. For the first time, the BBC has provided instant audio description access, so all episodes have it available automatically as soon as released on all of the formats on BBC iPlayer. Episodes 7, 8 and 9 air tonight, Thursday and Friday this week at 8 p.m. and continue the format of 8 p.m. releases for the remainder of the season. When There's Traitors, Uncloaked soon follows, with Ed Gamble speaking to the celebrity guest, the banished and murdered contestants, on the commentary of the episodes. New for Series 4, Uncloaked has switched from BBC Two to BBC One and will air directly after each Traitors episode. That's everything I have today, so I'll be on the waves again next week with what's set to be a busy one.
Thanks a lot, Rowan. I've never got into Traitors. Everybody says I should, but I love it so much.
I cannot wait for tonight.
I started watching The Celebrity Traitors. That was the first one I saw, I really enjoyed it. And I have to say, I've been right into it with this season as well.
I need a debrief of you then.
Perhaps. And as you can hear, you've joined us now. Happy January the 14th.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, it's a bit, perhaps, it's a bit long, the year is a bit long in the tooth to be saying Happy New Year. But anyway, Happy New Year to you. I did say it last week, but unfortunately, that all went off into the ether. But there we are. So, things that you may or may not have noticed since we came back in the new year. The number one biggest thing is we have a new bus. Our fantastic Citroen, which has got our new logo on it and looks absolutely splendid. We got it on the Wednesday after we came back. We had to leave it in dock, as it were, for a few days while we sorted out the insurance and certain permits that we need to operate the buses. But now it is in service and absolutely splendid. So expect to be on that fairly soon. It's a very comfortable, very nice bus, and we're very pleased with it. So congratulations in particular to Joe, who managed to get all the funding together for it, and to Carl, who's been supporting you in all the specs and everything like that. Now, the other major thing that has happened is that we have a new way now of signing into the charity. So whereas before somebody on reception was writing your name down in the little book, we've gone into the modern world, folks. We are now doing it electronically and digitally. So we've got an enormous iPad there. Oh, Elaine's giving me an old-fashioned look. But what that allows us to do is so it records people who are in the building, of course. So for if we were ever to have a fire evacuation, somebody just takes the pad away and outside, and when we have a list of everybody who's in the building. But it also allows us to record accurately the number of people who have been attending groups, including volunteers. So which is going to help us a great deal with reporting to the people that we need to report to.
The little book did that just as well.
The little book did not do that just as well. And I'll tell you for why. It's because some people did forget to sign out, and also all the sheets and everything like that, they had to be transferred manually onto a computer. So this is super super quick, and it's a lot easier to sign in anyway. So there we are. So those are the two biggest things that you may notice coming in the door. Well, you had a lovely new bus to get to the door with, and then hopefully a slightly more streamlined process for actually signing in. There's only a couple more notices I have for you. The fitness class, which takes place on Wednesdays, there will be no fitness class on the 28th of January, and nor will there be on the 18th of February. So if you're one of the people who's paid up front for that, then obviously it'll roll over to the next one. So just the 28th of January and the 18th of February. Sophie, the instructor, she has committed to offering some free sessions, free taster sessions for people, which will happen every 3 months or so. The one for January has happened, but if you're interested in taking part in the next free session, if you're wondering what it's like, and it's hard work, just keep your ears peeled, as it were, for the next time that a free session is coming up for the fitness class, which will probably be sometime in about March. Shop. I'm going to talk to you about the shop a bit, because there's lots of really good stuff in the shop. And I'll tell you what, we found that a number of people who attend the centre really enjoy going into the shop and getting the personal service that our volunteers in there provide. And they will always support you with your visual impairment to find something nice if you're looking for something nice, or you know, looking for things in particular. So we've got a number of our people who go in there already to do a lot of their shopping. Chris Norman himself, he says he buys quite a lot of his clothes in there now, of course it's excellent value. Mm-hmm. So do go in and have a look at our shop. Lots of good, neat stuff in there. Finally, I have to let you know, would have let you know last week, but one of our volunteers, Anne Dees, who was in the craft group, she sadly died at the end of December. Her funeral is actually this week. So if you're getting this Wednesday, Thursday, or indeed Friday morning, her funeral is on Friday afternoon at 3:15 at Canley Creme, followed by a wake at the golf club just down the road from here. I've got a number of people, particularly from the craft group, who are coming, and I'm taking the bus down as it happens, so probably not the big one, but so if you'd like to come to that funeral, then and you get this message in time, come to the centre for about 2:45 on Friday, and I will be able to get you down to Canley Creme. Otherwise, you know, you can make your own way there, of course, as well, if you're able to do so. So that is that, and I will be back with you, all things being equal, next week.
Thanks, Hugh. I'm a bit of a technophobe, but I'm now going to do my best to sign out electronically.
Yes, it's very good.
Well, I might need some in-service training.
Well, all you have to do is say to, today, Carol, I'm going, can you sign me out, please? And she will do the business for you.
Brilliant.
So it's nice and easy, which is what they did before anyway with the book. So.
Thanks, Hugh.
And now here's Sarah with the sport, and she begins by telling us why she was absent without leave for the last recording before Christmas.
Well, hello there, lovely, lovely, lovely listeners. Now, I want to start off with explaining why I was suddenly unable to record the last programme before Christmas. Well, I fell backwards down the lower three steps in my house thanks to my blood pressure tablets, and I broke several small bones in my hip. So I have spent the whole of Christmas and New Year flat on my back in George Eliot Hospital. Can I thank Hugh Sorrell, Pete Huxford and the lovely Elaine Farnell, your two newsreaders, for helping me get through it. Together they've been fantastic. So where do I start with the sport? Oh yeah, that was the other thing. There was no radio, can you believe, in George Eliot? And of course, all the City matches, bar the last match, a defeat to Birmingham. Got to mention that for my Blue Nose listener. We're on Sky, so I was stumped. It was terrible. Anyway, moving on and looking forward to a better 2026. Now, in summary, Coventry City played six matches since I last spoke to you, and now, I'm not including the FA Cup match that they've just played, six league matches, winning two, drawing two, and I'm afraid losing two. But we are still 6 points ahead of the chasing pack at that peak of the championship and top of the league. Got to get that in. Coventry Rugby, meanwhile, had a very good run of form after, shall we say, an iffy start. In fact, they have won their last five matches, but are now on a short break and don't resume until January the 24th, when they take on Bedford, who apparently are second in the league. Thanks to Pete for that bit of information. So, moving on to what happened last Saturday, that is the 12th. Well, it was the third round of the FA Cup for virtually all of the league teams, apart from those who'd been knocked out in the earlier rounds. But the thing with the third round is that's when the Premier and the Championship teams join in the bun fight. So it gets quite exciting. Now, to be truthful, our priority must be getting to that Premier League. I mean, sure, we could be lucky and draw a Man U or a Liverpool in the next round. Well, actually, we couldn't draw Man U because they were knocked out. But if we get to the Premier, we will be playing those teams every week during the season next year. So, Coventry City in the third round headed just a little way up north to Stoke to play Mark Robbins, our former manager, Stoke City. Now, I would like to say that our Frank also shared the view that the FA Cup was not our absolute priority. I mean, everyone knows that one of the big boys will win it anyway. And he made eight changes to his team, whereas Mark Robbins only made two changes. Now, these changes included our two new players, a Mr. Yang. Yang does not seem to be his proper name, but it's what they're calling him. I don't know what is on the back of his shirt, but anyway, I will also refer to him as Yang. And Mr. Essay. Now, Mr. Essay is on loan from a Premier team Crystal Palace. So we've got some pretty good stock there, really, when you think about it. Now, the match was, shall we say, not the most interesting to listen to. Bits of it were end-to-end, but at half-time it was 0-0. And we knew that if it was 0-0 at full-time, it would go to extra time and then penalties. And it did remain 0-0 until the 88th minute, when apparently Stoke scored an absolute wonder goal. And that was the final score, 1-0 to Stoke. Now, my initial reaction when the whistle blew was actually a bit of disappointment. You know, oh, we've lost, we won't go on the cup run. But then I remembered I didn't actually want us to win. Because, as I've said many times previously this recording, our priority has got to be the Premier, getting to the Premier League. Anyway, our next match is Saturday the 17th. It's a 12:30 kick-off, and it is a tasty local derby against the Leicester. So, fingers crossed, everything crossed, lucky kit on. Hey ho, the only way is up, and hopefully it will be City going up. At this point, before I leave the FA Cup matches, can I say a huge, huge, huge well done to Macclesfield. Macclesfield are in Tier 6, which is the same as Leamington are in, and they beat the current cup holders, Crystal Palace. It's apparently the biggest FA Cup shock known. So well done to Macclesfield. Moving on and actually talking about Leamington, I'm afraid on Saturday their match was postponed due to a frozen pitch. Well, if you remember, last Saturday we were just emerging from storm, whatever it is. And, you know, I can understand a lot of the non-league clubs were postponed because of frozen pitches. But Stratford put out a rallying call for supporters to help clear their pitch and clear their stands. And their match went ahead in Tier 7. And I'm pleased to say they beat Redditch 1-0 and are now seventh in their league. So come on, get up to six, then you're in your playoffs. Now, before I move on to other matters, apart from football, there are some other matters, you know. I'd just like to say that I was sort of surprised, but not surprised, if you know what I mean, to hear that the Leamington manager had stood down. He has been Leamington's manager for 16 years. That is some going. And he's guided the Brakes up to six, back to seven, up to six, back to seven. And I suspect that after 16 years, he just thought, I'd like a break from this. Now, the only other sport that I'd like to mention that I did cover earlier was the Ashes. But as you've probably heard, the Ashes were won, or retained rather, by Australia 4-1. But one of the few bright points in that was that Jacob Bessel, the young, and he's only 22, Warwickshire batter, really came of age in that very last inning, scoring 164. And at 22, he looks pretty damn good. The only sad thing is that if he is a regular in the England team, that will limit his opportunity to play for Warwickshire. Oh, well, onwards and upwards. And finally. You didn't think you were going to escape without a catch-up on Sports Personality of the Year, did you? Well, I know we're in 2026, but it was at the very end of 2025, and I was delighted by the winners of the four main awards. The overall winner and Sports Personality of the Year was Rory McIlroy, who I have covered throughout the year, starting, I remember, with his New Year's sort of what he wanted to achieve in 2025 back in January. The winning team, the Ryder Cup team. Again, listeners, I did the countdown to the Ryder Cup. Probably should have mentioned a bit more in the build-up, but then I covered the competition, and it was so good when Great Britain and Europe managed to retain it. The manager, coach, whatever, of the year, Serena Wiegmann. Oh, sorry, I better say that again. Dame Serena Wiegmann. Oh, yes, because she was knighted in the recent honours list. Her damehood can only be honorary because she's Dutch. But there again, when you think of so many of the other people who we call Sir and Dame, who are of other nationalities, we don't bother to say, oh yes, but it's only honorary. Anyway, she was the manager of the European Cup winning England side. In fact, they weren't just winners, they retained it, and the runners-up at the previous time, the last time's World Cup. So well done, Dame Serena. And the young personality of the year, beating amongst others Luke Lidler, was Michelle Agerman, who again I have mentioned in coverage. She is the young Manchester United striker who did so well, scoring several goals in the Women's European Cup final. So well done, one and all. And I am now on a countdown to the Winter Olympics. So that has been all your sport this week, lovely, lovely listeners. And I have to say, this current injury is really making me look forward and plan how I can enjoy every day. Make the best of it. Bye, speak to you next week, in brackets, hopefully.
Gosh, 3.5 weeks without listening to the Sky Blues. However did she manage? Now here's Dave with your postbag for the week.
This is Postbag. Join in the discussion.
Hello and a happy new year to you. Hope you've had a nice Christmas. Now please tell us about what you've been doing. Okay, did you spend it with the family or did you go out anywhere for a meal perhaps? Just tell us. And also the build up for Christmas. Any parties or carol concerts or anything like that. Okay, now we begin this week's postbag with a message from Gemma of the Resource Centre that has a lovely dog called Robin and also Edwina as well.
Hi everyone, just want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Gemma and Robin. Hope you all have a good one.
Hi everybody, it's Edwina. Wow, have you had a good Christmas? I hope you have. But I'm now giving you a very Happy New Year greeting. I hope there will be peace and happiness for a new year ahead for you. Take care, everybody. Bye.
As I say, so what did you do in the build-up to Christmas and Christmas itself? Now, Elizabeth went to a one-man performance at the Charterhouse, now run by the National Trust, of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, followed by a look at Cowden Christmas Lights.
Hi, everyone. Subject, lovely evenings out. I went to the Charterhouse, which is now managed by the National Trust. We saw an absolutely brilliant performance of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. The whole experience was enhanced by the spooky setting in the former monastery, which was founded in 1381. It was performed entirely by Paul Nolan, a theatre practitioner with over 40 years' experience. He was with the TikTok Theatre Company. He is also known as one half of the Cheeky Chappies. An absolutely fantastic evening. The return journey, we checked out a veritable wonderland of Christmas lights, which encompassed two houses in Barker's Butts Lane. The proceeds go to Zoe's Place, a hospice for children with life-limiting illnesses. A very worthy cause.
Oh, it's wonderful, isn't it? Hey, crikey! Oh! It's Father Christmas. Look at the snowman by the door with the hat on. Hey, crikey! With the carrot for a nose. Everywhere you look, you can see something different. I've never seen anything quite like this. Gee whiz.
Well, I'm glad you had a nice Christmas, Elizabeth, including the preceding celebrations. On to more everyday subjects, but a very important subject. Graham Whale gives his observations about the BBC, who have been under attack lately.
Dave mentioned what we thought about the BBC these days. And I don't like the way they're going down the commercial route. They keep trailing these programmes on BBC Sounds and iPlayer, sometimes disclosing the name of the station which they're going to go out on. And I think these podcasts are aimed at the lowest of common denominator, and I wonder how long it will be before Desert Island Discs will become Desert Island Spotify downloads. Okay, so I've had my moan, but generally speaking, I think the BBC do a good job. I think they have to be publicly funded. I can't see they can do the job any other way. And I can't see it as any alternative than the licence fee, even though politicians of just about all political parties would like to do away with the licence fee. I don't know what they think they're going to replace it with.
Well, as far as pods are concerned, if you go onto BBC Sounds on a smartphone, for instance, or ask Alexa, and ask for Secret Coventry, you can hear about the Ring of Bells murder of the landlady in Hill Fields, featuring Pete Walters. And that crime, that murder, has remained unsolved. And this Coventry's involvement in the time-travelling DeLorean car from Back to the Future. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And how come Holy Trinity Church remained intact during the Blitz? All these things and more can be found out by looking up or asking for Secret Coventry. And if you've missed a programme on the radio, try looking it up on BBC Sounds. And now we have a New Year greeting for you from the West Midlands manager of Tesco.
Hello everyone, so at the Coventry Talking newspaper, this is Matt here. The director for the West Midlands for Tesco. Just wanted to take this opportunity to wish you all a brilliant Christmas and a Happy New Year for 2026. Thanks ever so much.
That New Year greeting was made after Graham and I had spent 3 hours doing a Christmas show in the side aisle of Tesco Crosspoint Walsgrave, where Graham works. And Graham was there with his keyboard and singing, and I was singing, holding the mic most of the time. And when the customers came out with their trolleys, after going through the checkout, they put donations in the bucket I was holding in aid of Coventry Vision Hub. It was Graham's idea, Graham's planning. He was planning the gig and the order of songs, and Graham being on the keyboard and us singing mainly Christmas songs, about half and half. We had some lovely comments from customers, and we raised £177.21, which was a fantastic achievement, the highest raised so far for a Christmas concert at Graham's place of work. And that's all from Postbag this week. Now let's have your New Year greetings. Have you made any New Year's resolutions? What do you think of Postbag? Is there a real purpose that you can think of? I mean, I can, but can you? Okay, so if you want to ring us up, we're on Ring the Resource Centre on 024 76 717 522, and press 5 for Coventry Talking Newspaper and start speaking. It's as easy as that. Or send us a letter written by you or someone on your behalf, etc. There's lots of ways you can send a message into Postbag. Thank you, but let's hear from you next time. Thank you and bye for now.
This is Outlook. You can contact Postbag.
Our website is www.talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Our email address is postbag@talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Join in the discussion on Postbag.
And that's your Postbag. Until next week.
Thank you today for this week's Postbag. We really value your contributions, so please keep them coming. Dave's back again now to report on a Christmas extravaganza when he visited Birmingham's Frankfurt German Market, Camden's Christmas Lights and Sheffield Christmas Market.
Hello there, we're speaking to you from Frankfurt Christmas Market in Birmingham. And we're about to hear some Christmas songs from Manuel Moga. Wow, can you describe some of the stalls, please?
There's lots of sausage stalls. There's fruit in chocolate, like strawberries. And grapes in chocolate.
Yeah, pancakes.
Pancakes. And there's also like hot chocolate with alcohol in it, like Bailey's, Amaretto, rum, that sort of thing.
And it's a big bar over there where they're singing from.
Yeah, also there's a singing Rudolph that goes off every so often.
Oh, singing. That's just in front of the we're just in front of the town hall, aren't we? The Grand Town Hall. Yes. It is a fantastic market, it really is. And it stretches from, well, across the centre of Birmingham, doesn't it?
It makes it different from other markets based in the UK, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Really great, yeah. Fantastic.
Feliz Navidad. Oh. Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad. Prospero.
German Christmas market. Dawn, would you like to wish the listeners a happy Christmas?
Yeah, hi to all your listeners. Merry Christmas. Have a great one. Happy New Year. And love to you all.
Thank you for the fabulous dancing we've been doing.
Thank you so much for being the perfect partner dancing. I love you, David.
Thank you, Dawn.
You're welcome. Love you. Merry Christmas.
You've been singing to us, not been dancing with a lady to your singing. Can you tell me what you think of the German market here, the Frankfurt Christmas market? Are you enjoying being here?
Yeah, I'm enjoying every day here. It's very good here. The people are very friendly, dancing, party time every time, so it's very good here.
Yeah. So is it like Frankfurt German Christmas market in Frankfurt?
Yeah, no, I think here it's the better market because in Germany we don't have music there, so music there in Germany.
Oh, so you've made it better than the Frankfurt one. Yeah. Fantastic. Here we are. I'm speaking to you from Coventry Canal Basin, and I'm speaking to the super boss with a lovely cafe here. Okay, so can you give a nice Christmas greeting out to the listeners, please?
Merry Christmas to everyone in the world. Merry Christmas to people in Coventry from Goretti Cafe.
Hello, welcome to the Cowden Christmas light switch on. Have they just been switched on? Are these two houses joined together with glittering, beautiful, coloured lights? Right, so what do you think of the lights, Graham?
Yeah, very good, yeah.
Yeah, very good. What can you see?
Reindeer, about three reindeer. Reindeer pulling Santa's sleigh.
Penguin.
Yeah. Mary Joseph and the baby Jesus.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm speaking to a member of the crowd here. What's your name?
Gary.
So what do you think of the lights?
Magical. Oh, absolutely great. Beautiful.
Is there any you can describe?
Why, you've got glowing Santas, blow-up snowmen, you've got reindeers and Christmas trees, you've got a huge Merry Christmas on the front of the house, bows. It's beautiful.
Man, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. I'm speaking to Paul, so a fantastic crowd here, wonderful display.
But yeah, here come the rain, we've still got them here as well, so it's good to see them here with the rain.
Yeah, can you describe some of the lights, please?
We've got all sorts. We've got dancing lights, we've got snow machines, we've got flashing lights, we've got Christmas trees, silhouettes, we've got all sorts of stuff.
Well, we've arrived in Sheffield, where there's all Christmassy things. Big huge snowman.
It's a big penguin.
Yeah, big penguin, yes. Alpine Lodge. That's in front of the council house.
Big massive post box.
Oh yes. Yes, a lovely post box. Okay, and a polar bear with a kind of bobble hat on. And a scarf, red scarf. Hello there. I've just bought some Christmas honey from a stall in the lovely Sheffield Christmas market. What's your name?
My name is Linda, and I'm from the Bear Cool Honey Company. I produce award-winning honey.
Yes, okay.
It's beautiful. And bought by lovely customers like you who sing to me. Very well.
Happy Christmas. Merry Christmas to you.
And a Happy New Year.
We've got the Salvation Army.
Good morning, this is Sheffield Salvation Army, wishing everyone a very happy Christmas and a peaceful New Year. May God bless you all.
Thank you so much. Lovely music. Okay, where have we arrived at now, Graham?
The Courtyard Cafe in Sheffield.
That's in Attercliffe. And we're going to see a show?
Yeah, Christmas show, yeah.
And you're going to take part in it?
Yeah, should be good.
That should be good. Okay, you brought your melodica along.
Happy Christmas to everybody and have a lovely Happy New Year.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much, Nicola. Thank you.
I think we'd like to introduce the one and only, the wonderful Graham, to the stage. We're going to do a wonderful version of a lovely big seller with Julian and Katie and Graham.
Christmas, just like all
Just been to Lynn's live lounge and Graham's been playing the melodica fantastically with a group of entertainers. So did you enjoy that, Graham?
Yeah, it's really good, yeah.
Thank you. Well, that's all from our Christmas extravaganza. Okay, hope you enjoyed. Happy Christmas from me.
Happy Christmas from Graham.
Bye.
Thanks, Dave. And now Elaine continues the tour of Warwickshire villages and tells us all about the tiny village of Preston Baggot.
The village of Preston Baggot. There's not a lot to say about it. It's a small village with an interesting little church just to the east of Henley on Arden. The Church of All Saints stands high on a hill. It is very peaceful there, and the churchyard is kept with loving care. Those who are lucky enough to be there at the right moment may see the altar cross set ablaze with light, the architect having designed the window so that at sunset the dying sun strikes directly upon the cross. The church is 11th to 12th century and is steeped in history. Upon investigation for damp many years ago, two skeletons were found between the outer and inner walls, and after considerable interest and research, were duly given a Christian burial. Travellers are rewarded after making the steep climb up the narrow church path with panoramic views in all directions and with the crystal clear light of this high vantage point.
Thanks to Elaine, and she'll be off to another Preston next week, Preston-on-Stour near Atherston. Now, Margaret tells us about a new exhibition which invites the audience through a series of portraits to look beyond an individual's sight loss and instead discover their strengths and talents. This is written by Karen Rockett and is taken from the Daily Express.
Every 6 minutes, someone in the UK begins to lose their sight. More than 2 million people are living with sight loss, with approximately 340,000 people formally registered as blind or partially sighted. Now a powerful new portrait exhibition called Seen has been showcasing the lives of blind and partially sighted people across the UK, including recognisable faces, and it's been held at the Royal National Institute of the Blind. The 22 startling images by acclaimed photojournalist and portrait photographer Joshua Bratt, who has worked with Kate Moss, Naomi Campbell and Madonna, capture the essence of what it is like to live in a world of darkness or shadows, spotlighting individual strengths, experiences and uniqueness. I found inspiration for Seen when I noticed a cane user during his usual commute to central London, Joshua tells the Daily Express. Ignorantly, I would just see him as a blind person rather than just a man going to work with a job and a story. And I realised that if I was subconsciously labelling somebody and just seeing the disability rather than who they were as a person, then other people were likely doing that too. He decided to travel the country and take photos of blind or partially sighted people, highlighting their diverse backgrounds and stories to help change perceptions. Until then, Joshua didn't know anyone who was blind or disabled. "It was the first time I had photographed people who can't see what I have shot, so there was a lot of trust on their part, and I wanted to make sure I showed them looking at the best, he explains. It made me realise what a complex, wide-ranging disability blindness is. I made plenty of mistakes along the way, plenty of assumptions, like forgetting to describe the scene to them, the backdrop, the light, but I learnt a lot. All the people featured are hugely successful at what they do and have overcome many obstacles to achieve what they have. Joshua, 37, originally from Newport, South Wales, now based in London, has created a series of thoughtful compositions, inviting audiences to focus on the subject's achievements, passions and inner worlds. His free-to-enter exhibition was curated with accessibility at the core. Each portrait was accompanied by audio descriptions, while a tactile brochure was also available. Anna Tyler, chair of RNIB, was also photographed as part of the project. Joshua's work is a moving reminder that representation matters, not only in how people are seen, but in how we are heard, felt and understood, she says. RNIB was thrilled to open its headquarters to this exhibition. Dr. Nicholas Bonn, astronomer. Originally from Australia, Dr. Nicholas Bonn had a severe vision impairment from birth due to an eye condition called retinopathy of prematurity. Even though he couldn't experience the clear Australian night skies in the same way as his family, he was fascinated by space and decided to become an astronomer at a young age. After completing his PhD, he moved to the UK to start his career as a professional astronomer and now works at Portsmouth University's Institute of Cosmology and Gravitation. Most of Nicholas's work involves leading the Tactile Universe project, where his team is developing multisensory resources to give blind and partially sighted people more ways of accessing the stimulating parts of astronomy. The 42-year-old's portrait was taken at the University of Portsmouth in front of a Hubble Space Telescope image of the Carina Nebula, a vast cloud of dust and gas containing thousands of stars. I hope that after attending this exhibition, visitors will have come away understanding that with determination and sometimes some clever problem solving, blind and partially sighted people can achieve anything they set their minds to, says Nicholas. Joshua says, "It's incredible what Nicholas has achieved in his life. He has shows that disabled people have as much passion and drive as anyone else." Nan M, model. London non-binary model Nan M, who has albinism, is represented by the disability talent agency Zebedee. The experienced model has graced the pages of fashion and style magazines such as Mission Mag, Wallpaper, ID and LWF, and worked for Samsung, Canon, Cal, Charlotte Tilbury and Eastpak. Nan, who uses they-them pronouns and is in their mid-20s, is captured in a striking close-up portrait and was the only subject used to posing for the camera. Albinism, a rare genetic condition, is estimated to affect 1 in 17,000 people in the UK. It results in little or no melanin pigment in the eyes, skin and hair, causing pale skin, light hair and often serious vision problems because melanin is involved in the development of the retina. Joshua says, "I shot Nan M outside in natural light at West India Quay in Canary Wharf. They are striking individual. Like most people with albinism, Nan M is visually impaired but moves around London without assistance. It is amazing what they've achieved in an industry that is generally so rigid about appearance.
Some amazing people. Now, back in February 2022, historian and Coventry Society member Peter James told us about a Coventry-made watch called the Grand Compilation. Peter writes about a similar watch by the same manufacturer which recently sold for a record price. This is read by Nigel.
A Coventry-made pocket watch recently broke a world record when it sold for over £2 million. In early November 2025, Geneva hosted one of the largest watch auctions of the year. Many notable watches and clocks were offered for sale over the weekend. A pocket watch made by J. Player & Son in Bedford Street, Coventry, set a new world record for a British-made pocket watch at the auction. It sold for 2,238 Swiss francs, equivalent to £2,122,896, following an estimated sale price of £1 million. The auction was attended by 800 people, but there were 1,885 registered bidders based in 72 different countries. The auction brochure had stated that the watch demonstrated the incredible technical prowess of English watchmaking at that time. The timepiece had been described by some as a hyper-complication. A complicated watch is one with any function beyond a basic time display of hours, minutes and seconds. The phases of the moon, a perpetual calendar, stopwatch, an alarm, tourbillon are common additional features. This particular watch had taken 4 years to build. The seller had acquired the watch in 1975 and had owned it for 51 years. Both the buyer and the seller wished to remain anonymous. The auctioneer's Phillips indicated that the identities of both parties were confidential. Carl Player from Coventry, the great-great-grandson of Joseph Player, attended the auction in Switzerland and was allowed to handle the timepiece. He said that he felt a connection to his ancestor when he held it. J. Player & Son had a reputation for high-quality, complex timepieces and were pioneers of keyless watches. They had both Admiralty and Kew approval for their products and supplied devices to the Royal Observatory. This watch was described in the auction brochure as one of the most complicated English timepieces ever made. At the beginning of the 20th century, British watchmaking was in decline due to reluctance to use mass production techniques. However, watches produced were still renowned for exceptional quality and craftsmanship. The legacy of precision skills laid the foundation for Coventry's success in cycle, car, aerospace and machine tool industries.
Thank you, Nigel. Now, Coventry Evening Telegraph's reporter Danny Thompson writes about an artist growing up in 1970s Coventry. This is read by Elaine.
A Coventry artist has recalled what it was like growing up in the city during the 1970s and 80s. Hardish Burke is an actor, director, producer, writer, visual artist and DJ, whose family came to the West Midlands in the 1960s. He grew up in and around Stoke and later Urnsford Grange, in a period of industrial decline in Coventry, with racism and National Front thuggery on one hand and counter anti-racism movements on the other. Though a tumultuous time in many ways, Hardish says the period shaped him into being the artist he became. He is now telling the story of his own youth and his family's experience of moving to Coventry, both against a backdrop of the city at that time and the wider context of colonial Britain. Stories that made us, roots, resilience, representation, is open now at the Herbert Art Gallery and Museum, and it invites visitors to step inside a series of immersive rooms exploring key moments in time as South Asian communities adapted to social, political and cultural shifts in the UK over 5 decades. It includes the recreation of 2 bedrooms from the Coventry home Hardish grew up in. Coventry was a different experience in the 1970s and into the 1980s for several reasons, Hardish told us. I was a child living in the ethnically diverse inner-city ward of Stoke in the 1970s, where play took place on the streets and weekends were spent at relatives' homes, or one of the two Indian cinemas, the Ritz and Palladium. In the 1980s, I was a teenager living in the predominantly white suburban area, Earnsford Grange. This was a decade of finding my own identity, which included growing up with friends and learning about relationships, as well as developing a lifelong interest in the arts, which began with drama, music, making home movies, and designing comics and magazines. Coventry was always a cultural diverse city of global communities from my time growing up in Stoke in the 1970s, and then hanging out in areas like Hillfields in the 1980s. This led me to take an interest in the diversity of cultures, foods and communities, which has lived with me for the rest of my personal and professional life. Coventry's experience during the Second World War had seen the city become a refuge of peace and reconciliation. Like much of Britain, it needed rebuilding, literally, as well as manpower in terms of workers for our vibrant industries and for the newly formed National Health Service. The British Nationality Act of 1948 meant all people living in the Commonwealth could essentially become British citizens, opening up free movement and allowing the country to welcome people living in places like Asia, Africa and the Caribbean. This resulted in Coventry becoming a city rich in diversity. This was reflected significantly in all manners of ways, from music to food to sport. One of the city's most famous cultural exports, Two-Tone, was anti-racist by design. But like most things, there were two sides to this coin. Within all this, there was rife racism. Hardish shared talking about being a youngster in the 70s and 80s. From the National Front graffiti on public walls, which would become a no-go zone areas for non-white communities, to racist murders of South Asians like Satnam Singh Gill. This continued into the 1980s, when I began to experience racist abuse and attacks myself. But on the flip side, there were significant anti-racist movements coming out of Coventry and Leamington Spa, including the Indian Workers Association and Coventry Committee Against Racism. My father, Harbhajan Singh Virk, was a member of both organisations. Naturally growing up in the world shaped Hardish, his outlook and his work, including this Stories That Made Us exhibition. The experiences of growing up in Coventry are at the heart of the exhibition, he explained. From my family migrating to Coventry in the 1960s to growing up in an inner city ward of Coventry in the 1970s, when I watched my parents make this new world their home, to finding my own identity in the 1980s. This is as much about celebration through friendships, through relationships and cultural interests, as it is about the struggles and resilience. Both were integral to belonging and resistance, laying the foundations for the adult I have become, who is now telling these nuanced and multi-layered stories in the exhibition. Though rooted in his experience growing up in a South Asian community, the heart of the Stories That Made Us and what it looks and explores is for everyone, Hardish said. Even though South Asian narratives and heritage are at the heart of the exhibition, the themes and messages are universal. So the exhibition is for everyone. The exhibition plays several roles. It speaks about our shared histories, speaks about our shared experiences, and ask the visitor to find their own story in the exhibition. While migration to this country is generally considered an element of post-World War II, the exhibition acknowledges that the foreground of that was being laid hundreds of years prior. Hardish added, "This exhibition is telling nuanced stories through one South Asian family's journey over a 50-year period, framed within a 425-year pictorial timeline, stressing the diversity of our stories as well as telling the world about the relationship between the South Asian countries and Britain is centuries old. Stories that made us, roots, resilience and representation can be seen at the Herbert Art Gallery and Museum now, and you can see it until the 25th of May 2026.
Thanks to Elaine. And now here's Sarah with the long-awaited answers to her Christmas quiz.
And welcome back to Santa Sarah's 12 Questions of Christmas. Right, here goes with the answers. Question 1. A female goose is called a dame. Question 2. Lulay lula, thy little tiny child, is the Coventry Carol. Question 3. Tinsel originally came from Germany, as did the Christmas tree. Question 4. The first King's Speech was transmitted on the radio in 1932 by King George V. Question 5. In the film Love Actually, the leading male and the Prime Minister was, of course, Hugh Grant. Question 6. Mr. Blobby, the infamous Christmas number one, started life on Noel's house party. Question 7. It's Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid. The infamous opening lines of the wonderful Band-Aid number one were sung by Paul Young. Question 8. On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 6 geese a-laying. Easy that one, isn't it, eh? Well, it's easy when you know the answer. Question 9. A Christmas Carol was written by Charles Dickens. Question 10. The Christmas tree in Trafalgar Square is donated annually by Norway. Question 11. Santa's reindeer, Donner und Blitzen, actually means thunder and lightning. Question 12. And finally, the carol credited with having been sung in the trenches by the troops of both sides is Silent Night. Well, I hope you had a bit of fun with that, and may I take this opportunity to say to you all, I hope you had a very Merry Christmas and will have a fantastic 2026. Bye!
Well, how did you get on? Sarah's quiz answers actually bring us to an end of this week's Outlook, so from me and the rest of the team, it's goodbye and once again a Happy New Year to you all.